Hello, guys, and welcome back to another episode of Artsy Fartsy Immigrants. I'm very excited today to be on the phone with my friend Ben Dude. If you are somebody who enjoys what I make, and there are at least three of you, then you will have seen my video of I Wish I Hadn't Got Stoned, which Ben, we worked on that a little bit together. I drew some of the things out, but Ben did all the heavy lifting and animated everything and colored everything and did this great job. And he's worked on several videos of mine, actually. And I'm going to jump into all of that with him. He's an illustrator. He's an animator. He's a designer. He's a creator. He's also living here in Germany, which means we have so much in common, so many things to talk about. And we went to school together at the University of New Orleans. So without wasting much more time, I'm just going to jump right in. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to Ben Dude.
Oh, hey, everybody. Hello, hello.
Do you want us to go by Ben Dude or by your non-stage name?
My stage name? No. Well, let's stick with Ben Dude. That's fine. We can go with Ben Dude.
I love Ben Dude. And dude, I've also known you as Ben Dude. I think I knew you as Ben Dude for like a year before before your last name came up in class or something.
That's possible. Yeah. I mean, I said it in the very beginning of the Facebook days when I had the impression coming from MySpace that you shouldn't use your real last name, even though it was asking for your last name. So I was like, well, Ben Dude. And yeah.
That's how the mythos of Ben Dude started, was because you were unsure about using your last name on MySpace?
Or on Facebook, because on Facebook. It was such the early days of Facebook. Coming directly from, like, it was still in high school. So, like, coming from MySpace, where it never asked you for your full name, I was like, well, I shouldn't put my real name on the internet. I think back then, lots of people had funnier names on Facebook. But yeah, so it goes back to then. Yeah.
Like, everybody at school knew you as, still knows you as Ben Dude. Like, there's probably still, like a niche group of people that might not know that Dude isn't your actual last name.
This is true.
But funny with your Facebook history on your name, I was exactly the opposite. Like for the longest time, I used my real name on my private page, because obviously I had my real name on my music page. But then some years passed and I was living in Germany, and then I started noticing that, like, I don't know if you saw this too, but so many German people use these weird sort of fake alterations of their name as the Facebook name. Have you seen that?
That's true. Yeah, I actually have noticed that. And maybe Germans are very, very, like, conscious of data protection and whatnot. So they might have the teenager version of me senses, that youthful paranoia.
I do want to, there's so much about German life and behavior that I want to talk about with you, but that's a great starting point on its own, is that that was something I noticed that I didn't expect or hear about, or like, that's something you can only learn once you've lived in the country for a while. Is like, that's such a weird small thing. Like, Germans are so hyper paranoid and protective of their data, and this called this Datenschutz thing. They're so strict about it, and they're so paranoid about it. And even on Facebook, like, some guy's name can be, I don't know, like Florian Rinda or something, and his name on Facebook would be like Flo Rian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This weird separate, you know? And so there was even a moment where I had gone from Jordan Prince to like Jay as the first name, Jay, and the last name Pee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I followed the trend too. I thought, oh, I guess I've got to change my personal thing here. It's like something's, they know something I don't know. It's so strange, because in America, it's completely the opposite. Like, we have plenty of friends and family in America who don't care at all about this data protection or hiding their names from Facebook or something, right?
No, it comes up all the time. And, you know, I'm married, like you, to a German. And my mother especially has, like, no sense of it. And my mom has, like, a little blog that she posts like Louisiana recipes onto, and she had made a post that included some photos that she took at the Tree of Life in New Orleans, and one of them had included me and my wife in it, and I never thought anything of it. And randomly one day, another friend of mine was like, do you know that if you Google image search Tree of Life, that a photo of you is one of the top photos in Google image search?
No
and
way.
My wife freaked out. She's like, okay, you have to have your mother delete that photo off of her blog, because I guess
she wanted Google, to delete it.
She wanted it deleted because she, yeah, just the idea of having a personal photo up in a public space, just, yeah, in a Google image search that anybody could find, that, you know, all sorts of random stuff could happen from that, I guess, is the rationale of it. But yeah, my friend's reaction was like, wow, what an honor. But no. It had to go down. And yeah. So
what do you think that stems from? Like, it seems to be a pretty common thing. Like, even I know guys here in their 60s, all the way down to people our age, like early 30s, late 20s, and even younger. Like, I have a friend who's like 21. So the range from 61 to 21, there's this sort of German mentality of data protection and covering up the name and being a little extra safe. Do you know why? Oh, I'd love to hear it.
Yeah, well, no, I'm pretty sure, or like you could probably draw a lot of connections to the fact that the German Stasi, there was the German spies in the post, like World War II, like when there was the Berlin Wall, there were the DDR or the GDR, whatever, the communist part of Germany when it was divided, essentially like spied and collected records on people looking for those who were trying to thwart the communist party. And yeah, I mean, one time when I was in Berlin, I visited, there was like a museum there, like a whole Stasi museum. And I'm sure that it's just the recent history, because it was only like in the 80s, like that was still going on. So I think that it's just the recent history of having spying in your culture and having people sort of collect these masses of data on you to try and use it against you, that it might stem from. That's my theory, at least.
Wow. Okay. You know, I never thought about that, but that does actually make a lot of sense.
It's an interesting museum if you ever get a chance to pop in. Like, they have like cases that have, there's like, it looks like a rifle gun, but it's a camera that they could use for like being on the other side of a block and like taking these like stabilized photos before there was, you know, image stabilization to collect photos of people and stuff. And so now you have like, you know, I heard stories of little German villages that would, when Google Maps was starting to roll out internationally, that they would like make and like a blockade with the villagers to keep the Google image vehicles from rolling into their village, because they hated the idea of having their village just photographed and have the photos uploaded for anybody to see. Yeah.
Oh my God, man, this is super interesting. Like, I never knew any of that. I mean, I've heard some towns, like fighting against having the Google Map car come through, but this thing about the Germans actually makes complete sense if you know the history of about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, yeah, the history of it is crazy, and I'm no expert on it, but it was, yeah, like just kind of, I was looking for cheap things to visit like years and years and years ago when I was visiting Berlin.
I feel like Germans are extraordinarily in touch with their history and with with European and especially with their own country's history. I feel like they're very in touch and very aware, and like, I guess in their From what I understand, in their school systems, they are kind of beaten in the head with this stuff, so that obviously history won't repeat to an extent, and so they can. And I think maybe that comes into play when they feel so paranoid about data, because these other things are so prominent and they think about them so much growing up.
I know that with my stepdaughter, who's now in school starting to get the World War II lessons, and she's very sensitive to the idea of war. It is very sensitive for her, and so just getting secondhand to see that, like, I sat down to watch with her, like, a German-made show, and they're, like, introducing to young kids, like, what went on. Not super young, but, you know.
I was going to ask, how young do you get the feeling that they start talking about that stuff?
Well, it's starting, like, at, like, sixth grade, that they start getting into the topic of World War II and what was going on there. So, they have, like, kids shows produced to talk about it, and it's actually really interesting because they try to have stories of kids during the war from all different perspectives, like a story of a kid who had to escape, a story of a French girl who whose family took in Jews that were escaping during World War II, and then also, though, like, a story of a boy who had to, like, join the army. So, they try to be really thorough about it, where, I feel like we barely get anything. But I do think it's understandable.
That's even its whole other topic, is the level of education that you see people getting here, as opposed to the education that, at least I feel that I got at a public high school in Mississippi. It's a completely different playing field. It's like astronauts and farm workers or something,
Yeah, and you're in Bavaria, at least from what my wife told me, like, in Bavaria, it's extra strict. And she told me, I don't know if this is, like, still true, but at least when she was finishing school, that when you're applying to a school in Bavaria, like a university in Bavaria, you're not from Bavaria, they basically lower your high school grades by one grade because they consider the education outside of Bavaria so less substantial.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's still the case, or I could be getting the information wrong, but in Bavaria especially, it's a very, like, taken very serious education. They're very proud of the education.
Okay, wow. I'm learning a lot so far. I mean, we are just about a little more than 10 minutes into this, and I am learning so much from you.
I hope that I'm getting all my factoids at least semi-correct, but
if, like, every single thing you said was
totally
not
opposite.
Correct, like, yeah, completely the
Bavarians
opposite.
Are the idiots the of Germany.
It's the dumbest people. Nothing ever happened here. No one here is paranoid. It's only Hamburg. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh my god. Okay, well, let's backtrack a little bit. We dove in so quickly there. But we've known each other for so long, and I think that's bound to happen a few times, that we're going to branch off, not thinking about it. But, I think you and I met, was it like 2011 or 12?
Yeah, I think it would be about 2011. I think that if I'm remembering the first class that we had together, cause I don't think we had that many, but it would have been John McGowan Hartman, right?
That's right.
Either film history or film theory. Pretty sure that was in 2011, because it was in 2012 that I mean, it could have been in 2012, but it was in the fall semester of 2012 that I went to do a German exchange in Hamburg. And that's what got me sort of tied up with Germany and led me ending up over here.
Oh, okay. So the fall of 2012 was your first trip to Germany, or your exchange.
Right. I did an exchange semester here. Yeah.
That's so crazy. I think I never really understood that you spent like an entire semester in Germany. For some reason, I understood it more as that you spent a few, I mean, you did spend a few months, but if you say someone spends a few months somewhere, it doesn't mean that they really lived there for a semester.
It's probably because I think we got to know each other a lot better when I got back. Last year of UNO. And it was in that time after I've like finished my studies that I started making trips to Germany. And so that's probably the reason why you're thinking more of like just being just the trips that I was making then. But yeah, it was a full semester in 2012.
You and I both knew Andrea.
Yeah.
And we knew Ify from our classes because coincidentally, mm-hmm. there's these two German women in our film department. But funny enough, before I met either of them, or maybe I knew Andrea around the same time because we had some classes, but really before my life turned into being basically based around Germany completely,
right?
You know, you were just that guy I knew that went to Germany a lot.
right.
And I remember thinking that was so interesting. I was like, this guy really digs Germany. And I never put it together, like, why he goes there, if he's studying something, if he, you know, because before we really got to, like, talk and make friends and work on projects together, I was so naive, man. I just thought, that's a really interesting guy. He really digs Germany. And I just wouldn't ask any more questions about it, you know? Which I think is like a very American thing to just go like, huh, that's cool. And then just not ask questions about it.
That's true. Germans love to dig in with questions. Very inquisitive.
Dude, I'm telling you. It's so polar opposite here. It's crazy. I thought about something the other day actually about Germans, or at least Bavarians. I can only really speak for Bavarians.
Right.
But there's this thing like, there's this lack of like a humble assumption here. And what I mean by that is I've worked at so many restaurants and cafes here, and I worked at a lot of restaurants and cafes in the States as well. And one thing that's really clear in the States is if somebody is walking past your cafe, and let's say that the website says that the store closes at 6, but the person walks by at like 5:45, 5:50, and all the lights are off, the front door's locked, and you maybe see somebody like working in the back kitchen. This American thing assumes like, oh, it was a slow day. And they've closed up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about it. You just go and you're like, they already closed. And there's no there's no investigation. There's no doubt in your mind. That's what happened. And I've worked at so many restaurants and cafes here where the situation was polar opposite, man, where the door was locked like 10 minutes early. No one had come in for at least 90 minutes. And it was the end of a shift. And I said, you know what? I did this so many times. Like either it was a hard Monday or it was a boring Friday. And I was like, I'm just going to tip it off a little early. No one's going to care. I'm going to save the boss some electricity and water bills, whatever. Lock the door up front, turn the music up in the house, go in the back, start washing all the plates and pans and whatever, running the machines. And dude, in Germany, it has happened so many times that I hear like a knocking at the front door on the glass or whatever. And I have to lean out of the door and I see a German person standing there, like tapping their wrist, which has a watch on it. And then pointing at the door that has the hours on it, going like, but I don't understand. Your sign says that you're closing at 6 p.m., but yet it's here now only 5:52 p.m. So why is the door, but it's locked? And it's crazy to me that there's no, like, just assumption. They don't go by and just go like, it's locked. Oh, well, slow day. You know what I mean?
It's like, you know, if the sign says it's open, it has to still be open. We have to be able to get what we want.
Exactly. I don't know. I mean, that's such a specific example, but that's something that I have experienced at least 10 times over the past 6 years. Like, there's been some, because the last year, I guess, or a little more than a year, is the only time I've been living here where I didn't have a day job, you know, thank God, at some restaurant or cafe. Ever since I moved here until that time, I've had a day job, and all of them had an experience at one point in my time there where somebody came by the door and was like, but I don't understand, Dole says 6 p.m. and it's 5:53, you know? That's a big difference, I think.
It is definitely a German thing. But interestingly, I had a funny experience that was the opposite here, but because it was not Germans. Because in the neighborhood that I live in Hamburg, it's actually, like, I think that Germans make up maybe only 50% of the area. It's the rest is from other ethnicities. There's a Turkish grocery store that's the closest one to us. And I was walking by and, like, it looks like they were closing up and it was after the time hours. And I was looking in and the guy who was at the counter was like, oh, do you need something? Like, anytime you see one of us here, feel free to come in and grab what you need and we'll let you pay for it. And I don't know. It's a very nice opposite thing. But then that makes it sound like we're being mean.
It makes it sound like I'm the asshole.
No, it's.
But I was. I am. I hated those jobs. So, you know, I had an agenda.
By the way, congratulations that you've been able to leave that industry behind you. Welcome to the scary world of freelancing.
Selbstständig.
Oh, man. Yeah. Freiwillige and selbstständig are like the two most, like, whew, terrifying words when it comes to your taxes and your health insurance. But. Yeah, thank you, man. That's really, I've really been lucky and grateful for the past year. I guess a little more than a year now of being in that world. And man, it's such a big weight off your shoulders to, like, whatever things you have to get through, whatever things you have to do throughout the day that aren't your work, whatever obligations they may be, if that's family, or if that's helping somebody do something else, or if you promised, you know, your partner you'd go do X or whatever, like, whatever isn't part of your job, you don't feel this anxiety the same way that you do if you're stuck at a cafe for 5 hours.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you're still at home, you may be, like, running some errands, but you're in your brain, you're thinking, but I'm going to be home. And, like, then there's that 1 hour. Then at night when they go to bed, I have 3 hours. Then I could do, you know, like, you're thinking about your schedule in a totally different way as opposed to, well, I guess from 8 a.m. until 4 p.m., I will do nothing except serve soup and salads.
Yeah, it's kind of, we get to balance things the way that we want to in a lot of situations, which, yeah.
And all my friends, I feel like, I don't know if I'm the last one to join the crew, but I feel like I was one of the last ones, you know? We have this friend, Bruno, who, of course, he's in slightly different circumstances. It's not like he's got the poorest family in the world, but he was always just working as he wanted to. And that was, like, one of my closest, if not for a while, the closest friend I had in New Orleans for definitely a big window there. And I thought, man, I'm so jealous that this guy gets to wake up, go to his garage, look at his, he had a red camera, and, you know, play with his lenses and then just think of ideas. Just go, I think I'm going to try and, like, write a script today, or I'm going to meet with this guy and talk about a music video, or I'm going to talk to them about a documentary, or I'm going to shoot a feature in Austin. You know, and I was like, oh, that's so cool. And then I would go to Rue de la Cour over on Oak Street and serve coffee for 6 hours. And, like, oh, I hope I get $20 in tips, you know.
I think Bruno's been the envy of us all. But that's
fair. Yeah, he's a bad example because he's been pretty lucky as well. He works hard, don't get me wrong, but he started off a little lucky.
It's true. But yeah.
We say that with love.
We do. Bruno's also one of the sweetest people I think that we both know. So.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. And speaking of him, actually, we talked a little, like, I guess, what was it, a month ago we texted about going to America. Mm-hmm. And man, we're going to go. Actually, let me look at the, we fly in 10, no, it can't be 10 days. Wow, it's 10 days.
Woo, it's coming up.
It's crazy, man. We're going to go with the whole gang over to, like, a direct flight. We're going to go from Frankfurt to Atlanta, and then Atlanta stay a night, and then go with my family to my brother's house in Murfreesboro, which is not too far from Nashville. And then go from there after a few weeks to my parents' house, which is in a different part of Tennessee. And then go down to New Orleans, Louisiana. Doom, 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 doom. And see all these people that we're going to be name dropping for the next 40 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. I'm
so excited.
This is such the right time of the year to go visit. Like, yeah, actually, just had the 5-year wedding anniversary on March 4th of the wedding that we had in New Orleans, because we had a wedding here first in Europe. That was the one that helped me quickly get a visa. But then I wanted to have a wedding with all of my people, in Louisiana. So we had to do a second wedding, and yeah, that's still like that was for me the real wedding. And yeah, just March time, springtime, it's my favorite season in the South. It's like really close to fall, but it's like kind of everything coming alive and everybody trying to get in all of their excitement and in life in before the like a painful aggressive summer starts beating down. So yeah,
that summer, man, that summer is really, really rough. I think you're totally right that there's something so, what's the word, like, especially about like a New Orleans spring, there's something so,
yes,
I mean, you said it, it's like alive, it's very
it usually includes Mardi Gras as well, like starting off the springtime season there. Like, I guess technically
they just
it's
had
not,
it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I guess it's technically when you're going by like official calendar seasons, it's not spring, but I never knew until I lived in Germany that spring didn't start in like February. Like, I always thought that like winter was like just, I don't know, September to January, and my birthday is the last day of January, and I always remembered having like a warm and sunny birthday, and so in my mind that was when spring was, and spring very quickly ends, like, you know, at the end of April when it starts getting too hot. But turns out actually that's not really the official seasons, and yeah, I learned that here the hard way. The seasons here are a little bit more aligned with the you know, what it says in the calendar is when
that's,
you know,
true. Everything starts. That's true. I think that's almost something that I think that is something I kind of enjoy about the nature part of, at least Bavaria, is that there's very distinct seasons.
Yeah.
And despite all of the wonders and like, you know, irrefutable beauty and magic of New Orleans, there's just a deathly hot, beat your neck into the sand summer that makes you want to like cry, and then there's not for a little while.
Yeah, exactly.
I am, there's that little window.
I do have to admit, I am envious of your Southern German seasons, because here it's much more like Seattle. It's like Seattle, or like, you know, Southern.
Is it really?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, if you had asked me how I was feeling about living in Hamburg, like, I guess 3 weeks ago, I would have been like, oh man, I don't know how I make it through this, because I had heard from my mother-in-law that we had met up on February 16th, and she said that there had been a total of 6 hours of sunshine to that point in the year. So in that month and a half, the sun had crept out from behind the gray for a total of 6 hours. And I totally understood it. I was God. it was really, but now the sun has come up. Now I'm like, ah, oh, this is such a great place to be. I love it here.
It's the best place to be.
It's so nice now. Even though it's still freezing cold, it's yeah, but you actually get snow on mountains. So I am envious. You get a proper winter here, down there. But yeah.
You know what's crazy is Ife's family has this apartment, this tiny little 10 square foot apartment at the Olympia Stadium, where all the athletes lived back in the 70s. And is in that little, in the Olympic Village.
What is that? Is that in the village where they live in? I forgot the one that I visited. Where the...
No. So you stayed at this company owned complex here in this mountain town where the family lives.
Okay, yeah, it's not in the mountain town. Okay, that's what I was. Yeah.
No. Sorry. In Munich, there's the
the
Olympic Stadium. You know that they built in the 70s, where the terrorist attack took place. You remember?
Actually, I didn't know about that. Okay, but okay, yeah. So we're talking about in Munich. All right.
What's funny about that? What's just a small caveat? Our most by far dedicated listener, other than my mom, is a genius screenwriter and a friend of ours, and he. Is working on, I know that I can't say too much, but he's working on literally that topic.
Okay.
Currently.
Okay. It's on your mind then.
This event. Yeah, it was on my mind. But anyway, in Munich, there's this crazy, I hate that I don't know the architect's name because I've stayed in that building so much, and it's now I'm talking about it a lot with my friend. But anyway, there's this crazy spider web design. You should really Google it. The Munich Olympic Stadium that they built in the 70s for the Olympics. It's this wild spider web design. It's very misshapen and looks like weird twisted steel and glass. It looks so cool and really modern. And it looks like it could have been built last year. And then there's all these dirty, cheap, sort of small Olympic apartments all around it. And loads of people live in these buildings, like people who just moved there because they're super cheap and it's really small, and or students live there and tourists and all these people go there. And because my brother-in-law used to live in this place. He was studying when he was younger and he needed to get an apartment in Munich. So he just said okay, screw it, whatever, I'll just get one. So he got this tiny little apartment in the Olympic Village there. And what I'm trying to say is basically from that window in the Olympic Village, because you were talking about the seasons, on a clear spring day or even a summer day, you can stand on that little balcony in this Olympic Village and look out south and you can see the Alps.
Oh my God, from Munich? Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Whoa. Yeah.
What's also interesting is from the window that they have there. And I mean, it's so crazy. It's like the size of a bathroom. It's this tiny little place. But if you stand on the little balcony, you can, on a very clear day, you can go out and see, you can look and see the mountains. And then if you look really directly down, I'd say right at 5 o'clock or 3 o'clock, there's a building. And that is, you can see the balcony from the apartment where they had this terrorist attack.
Whoa.
And it's really crazy. Yeah, you should look up September 5th terrorist attack Munich. It's this crazy story. Mm-hmm. Just historically, it's just really interesting. But it was this wild event in the 70s. But anyway, Yeah, it's like talking about seasons. That's something I noticed for the first time. I was like, I didn't know you could have such little pollution.
Yeah, that.
Or like just crazy. The seasons. It's just so clean. Like it was just such a clean view. But what was the, like, what was the, your first impression when you moved to, when you moved officially to Germany, like your first year, what was this feeling, these feelings that went through you? Because I had, my first year was so, so many ups and downs, so many things of like questioning the choice, you know, really hunting and grinding for friends, not even thinking about the language. That was like a whole different thing I'm still dealing with, but just overall, as like a New Orleanian guy, creative guy, had a huge community, a tight community in New Orleans. What was your feeling when you first went to Germany?
I mean, I guess it helped a lot for me since I had lived in Hamburg before fully moving here. I do, though, like the feelings of ups and downs, like I also know that because when I moved here, like I knew that I was going to be not moving here forever, but moving here in a very kind of permanent way because I was moving in with the person that, or moving in with a person who already had a kid. And so moving here, I knew that like, it was going to be really like sticking here, and there was like kind of no going back because there was a person that I wanted to marry, and like it the feelings.
Our stories aren't so different there.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I mean,
you come for a person, and you're like, well, I gotta see where this goes first, and deal with the other stuff later.
It's true. It's true. I mean. I guess like it helped that I was like in the first year that I was here, I made a couple of visits back and forth. So it wasn't as scary. And I moved here in the spring and everything was just, so it was the best time, or the real spring. It was like May when I moved here, the German spring, which I always thought was summer. It was really, actually the one thing that I always think back to of my first year moving here was actually a sense of pride, because at the point that I moved here, and I guess it was not so long after you, 2016, like, it was at the point when the Syrian refugee crisis was happening and Germany was opening up their arms to all of the refugees. And there was like graffiti around Hamburg and signs posted that was like, refugees welcome. And then that fall, Trump was elected, and I was just feeling so like I made the right choice. I'm like, wow, I am very happy to be here and not in the US where it feels like everything is falling apart. And I guess the only times that I was feeling especially low was when I was kind of vicariously feeling all of my friends' stress and kind of misery of like what I felt like was a very low point in US history and like everything that was going on.
Right.
And I don't know, like, yeah, I was still very excited, but missing friends and missing New Orleans was always a challenge. Like, I feel like I share that with you a lot.
But. Absolutely, man. And that might have been the most difficult part about it, because when I think about, you know, it's really funny about how I'm, as I'm getting older, maybe perceiving time, because when I think about like 2011, 12 until 2015, that window of UNO times and like everybody piling in at Ben Dude's house to go watch a movie, or to like you brewed your own beer or whatever. Mm-hmm. or like us going to parties at Bruno's house, and all these film people there are like shooting the Fresh Ground music video or doing all these things. It just feels like that really was last year for me. It feels so recent. It still feels like just on the, like I can still taste it. But on the same topic, like you say, when you move here in 2016, Trump gets elected, right? For me, when I think about, I remember I was sitting on the sofa in our current apartment watching on Sky the live stream of his inauguration. And for me, for some reason, that feels like it was 2020. Like it wasn't that, like it was just like a, like just 2 years ago. And Biden came in like early this year. You know, it's just like everything feels a little bit like much sooner than it really is, because what's wild to me about Trump having been in 2016 was I base 2017 and 18 and 19 off of the concerts I was doing, because that was the busiest time for me. And 2017, dude, I mean, this isn't like some sort of weird brag, but like I was so lucky and grateful to be able to do like a huge tour.
Yeah.
And I was going all through these different cities and major festivals. I got to come see you for the Reaper Bond Festival.
That was awesome.
I got to, you know, play for this British band Elbow in Switzerland. Like I had all these great shows and connections and gigs. And I don't remember it ever coming up at all that Trump was president. And it didn't feel, it still felt to me like Obama was president. And then when the corona epidemic hit, then in 2019, early 2020, then I thought, oh, it feels like Trump was elected. I don't know. It feels like, you know what I mean? It feels later than it really was.
I guess,
maybe I'm just,
I think, crazy. I mean, it makes sense. You were really in a stride that you were hitting then, because for me, it actually took a while to kind of get into, like, with kind of like, well, your life being as a touring musician and my life being like an animator and working in like post-production, like, it actually took a while for me to hit my stride here, which didn't really start until just before the pandemic. And feeling very, very fortunate for me, like, at least work-wise, like, it was only shortly affected when all of the companies were pausing things, but I feel very fortunate being in post-production and being able to do animation and motion graphics that, you know, lots of projects that I do don't need to have any filmed footage first, like, you know, doing fully animated, more cartoon style things, or doing explainer type videos. Like, luckily for me, that's something that a pandemic wouldn't change. And so we kind of have an inverse path. Like, it was slow, and then just before the pandemic was when I made the work connection, the change for me that started making everything easier.
Let's talk a little bit actually about what you do, because we haven't, I mean, for the people that listen regularly, we have really gone off the deep end about a few different things that I love talking about with you, but I haven't really, like, for those who have no idea who you are, like, you know, we met in film school. And, you know, were you always, like, from the beginning, like, I want to go to school and I want to get into animation and post-production? Or what was your path, kind of?
Yeah, well, definitely I always had a strong interest, in the post-production side of things. Like, before starting doing the film school at UNO, like, in high school, I tried, like, basically late high school, I started trying to turn like every like school project assignment that I could into a film project, because outside of school I started making some goofy films with friends, and I was like, oh, but I could also do this with my school projects. And I did a short film for the biology class that I had, doing like a film noir on like protein synthesis. And I had my friends act out being like RNA and DNA and turned it into like a crime story. And basically everything I tried to like turn into a ridiculous story. And I was always, yeah, really excited about the possibility of like doing visual effects. So like I tried out doing green screen and stuff, but like way back then. Yeah, so it was kind of always my interest, and it wasn't actually though until I knew that I would be moving to live in Germany that I made a very intentional shift to try to do more animation, because before that I was doing a lot of editing work, but I had the feeling, because I was also freelancing then, like basically from graduating I was freelancing, I thought that I would be more likely to keep the contacts that I had if I could do animation stuff, because being so far away, footage files are huge, and it just wouldn't be practical to like transfer over hundreds and hundreds of gigabytes of footage. And so I intentionally made like a move to animation. So it's really only in the past like 5 years that I've gotten more into animation and motion graphics and that kind of thing, which I've been super happy with, actually. It's a very
savvy business decision on your part to see the market change and realize that you should open up a new channel into what you think you might be good at in order to like optimize your market.
I mean, there was obviously like luck though. With I didn't know that a pandemic would be happening and that like film.
Yes, you did, Ben, dude.
Shh, don't tell them. I released the COVID. But I mean, yeah, it was. I did always have the interest in it, but yeah, it was an intentional thing. I was like, I knew that I could keep doing that much more easily, and then with Easy Does It, I was able to VFX supervise from overseas, and it definitely would not have worked to edit. Like in the very beginning of the project, I was on board to edit, but we, like as the project went on and grew and grew and grew, we made the sensible decision to get me to take, because also when we started it, we had no idea how much visual effects would be going into the movie.
For those who don't know, Easy Does It's an independent feature film that Ben worked on for 45 years.
It's a very long project. I mean, like, yeah, we started it in 2016, and the premiere was at the end of 2018. Yeah, which also, the movie features music from Jordan, from you.
So. I have to give, we've mentioned him already, Bruno Doria, I have to give him 100% of the credit that allegedly from the very beginning on, he fought tooth and nail against producers and directors and whatever to keep the original two songs from my first album in the movie, and he succeeded. Yes. And I'm very... very thankful to him for that. It was a nice paycheck, and it was also the first film that licensed my music. So I'm very, very thankful for that. And actually, you can go to iTunes and rent it or buy it. Easy Does It with Terminator 2's Linda Hamilton and Mad Men's, is it Benjamin Bratt?
Brian Bratt.
Yeah. Oh, man, I'm sorry. Yes. Brian Bratt. It's funny because I'm actually rewatching Mad Men right now, and I took me until the second season to go, oh, that's that guy.
I think it's also on Amazon, and I think I'm not sure if this is still the case, but I'm pretty sure it made it onto in the US Amazon Prime streaming even.
That's really cool.
So very accessible, yeah. Indie film.
It's really cool, and it was like the core, I would say, at least for my time there, and probably for yours too, Easy Does It is like the core definition project of our era.
Yeah, it was the penultimate film or project of the whole team and crew that we had from that time leading up to Germany. And now a lot of people have spread to different ways, but I think that it won't be the last project. Actually, I still think that there's going to be more projects in the future. It's just a matter of time.
There was two companies, right? So there's Bruno's company, Worklight Pictures, mm-hmm. which yeah. was part of it, and Elysian Fields Independent, EFI.
That's right. Yes.
And right. that's Ben Matheny, Will Addison. At the time, it was also Corey Dumas-Dill and Danny Abel, right?
Yeah, and Lee Garcia as well.
Lee Garcia, that's
big
right.
Big part
Garcia.
Of EFI. Yes.
That's
yes.
right. Yeah, and Ben Matheny. So, and of course, we can't mention Easy Does It without mentioning Ben Matheny and Matthew Martinez.
That's right.
So we're just going through the whole roster here, but like... Mm-hmm. Ben was a producer on the film and is one of the two leads, and one of our best friends, Matthew Martinez, is the other lead. Corey Dumas-Nil, another friend of ours, is the third. And then, of course, Linda Hamilton is the main villain of the movie, who plays, I think her name is King, right?
Yeah, King George, yeah.
King George, that's right. Yeah, really fun movie. And was like the kind of like yeah you said it right the penultimate project of our time there, and it's really fun. Like I remember even when Will Addison was the brainchild behind that, and he made this short film for the University of New Orleans Film Fest,
yeah,
that which was also like another great era. I mean, imagine you're going to film school with all your peers. And you work on, I don't know, one or two projects in that semester, maybe more if you work in post-production like you. And then you get to go and sit down in a 4K cinema with great sound and watch everybody's films on a fun evening.
Yeah, yeah. And it was always the highlight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Man, that was so cool. I remember so many different nights of different people's like comedies and dramas and whatever, and Will Addison dropped Easy Does It, and I was also lucky to put some music in that first short film.
Yep.
And I thought, oh, this is so exciting. It's so like Tarantino-ish and Scorsese-ish, like just to name like the most generic, like so you know the style, you know? He had his own thing going, but it's like in that vein. And then, you know, for him to decide, okay, this is going to be a feature, and they worked really hard, and they got it funded and made a real movie out of it and got some names in there. I mean, it's really impressive. And to really see them go through all that work and finally get it finished, it was really a window into seeing how genuine independent films get made.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, I mean, we were right there next to seeing people do the hard work, and you see how they have to try and fundraise, how they have to market themselves, how they have to try and curve and bend and sway to get this thing made. And it was really cool, I thought.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. And it was also like, it was a labor of love, because even though we did get funding, I mean, the funding we poured into almost everything except ourselves, so it was also still a passion project. And it was like, yeah, see, I really wish you could have been there. I was really, really lucky to be able to schedule a visit back to New Orleans at the time of the premiere, but being in the Orpheum Theater, getting a perfect Friday evening spot of the New Orleans Film Festival was also really, really special.
Oh, man. I would have loved to have seen the premiere. That would have been so cool. But I remember the first time I sat down at my laptop, I don't know how many months after it was out officially and done. Finally, everyone's done. Your hard, long work was over. You did so many hours, I can't even imagine. And Bruno and everybody else finishing this movie. And I remember I sat down, opened up iTunes, and was like, I'm going to type in Easy Does It and see it here on my screen, like a real, you know, you have this thing that you imagine your parents probably sometimes don't get what you do, and they think maybe if they see it come on NBC or on Netflix, then it's a real thing, and then they get it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. No, it's like because they don't really... That's for them what the reality of like film and television is.
Besides that, it's through their sort of standard. And I remember sitting there in iTunes and was like, I'm going to feel that. I'm going to type in this movie that so many of my closest hardworking friends spent years on, and I'm going to see it here right next to like famous big movies, you know. And it was such a cool feeling just to, before I even rented it or bought it or whatever, just to sit there and like see it on iTunes, like a real, it's like, oh, it's actually a movie now. That was the first project where everybody who was on it was somebody that I knew.
Yeah.
And that's such a rewarding feeling, you know, it's just amazing. Plus, it's good.
Go watch it. It is a treat. It is, yeah, a very funny.
It's a ride.
Yeah, it's a ride. Oh, perfect. A road trip movie.
I don't know how we branched off on Easy Does It, but yeah, you were saying like you had sort of morphed into more of this post production work, right, for this film, and then.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I was saying earlier that it took me a while to kind of find my stride, but it was the thing that really changed it for me in my work life here in Germany is that in a like totally kind of random coincidence sort of way, and it like late or kind of fall 2019, I got a call from a friend pretty late at night already, like I think it was like 9 or 10 p.m. And he was like, hey man, I have an extra ticket for the Adizi festival, which I had never heard of. It turned out to be the art directors club festival event. So it's one of the biggest marketing festival sort of things in Germany for like video and film advertising, where basically the biggest and most impressive ad and video campaigns are given awards and whatnot. And this was the after party, and he had a ticket to it, and I was like, well, I'll go, not really knowing what it was. And it was a crazy, wild party. And there he introduced me to the ex of one of his coworkers who had just started her own agency to represent like video post-production artist. And she was like, oh, you're a video artist? Yeah, I'm looking for more people. And
that's crazy.
Yeah, just total coincidence, but we hit it off super well, and I was having an incredible amount of imposter syndrome because, you know, I had only made the transition to, I mean, she also represents editors as well, but I was trying to, you know, be more animation forward, and I told her that, but it felt like total imposter syndrome to have an agent, which I didn't know was such, like, I knew that like artists and actors, like, or, you know, musicians and actors get agents and whatnot. And I didn't really know that it was much of a, and it really isn't a super huge thing for video production artists, which is probably why I had never known anybody that had one, but they're based out of Berlin, which is not far from Hamburg. It's like an hour or so with a high speed train. And she wanted to have artists that were also in Hamburg. And yeah, from like, because when I came here, it was kind of hard getting connections, but with somebody who has an agency representing artists, all of the really big studios and agents come to her to find artists to fill in roles. So from that point on, I started getting connections to a lot bigger and better paying jobs. And it was also, it took a huge stress away from me as far as like the business side, because one of the, you know, things that I always had a terrible, terrible time doing was telling somebody how much something cost or like how much I paid. And I talked to her yes. about like how much I'd been charging. And she was like, you know, like if like a studio needs you to use your own computer, you should be charging an extra 150 euros a day. It's like, wait, what? I've been missing out on so much money. And so having somebody else who could say the number of that, like the day rate that has always made me just feel uncomfortable to say, and has that I've felt imposter syndrome for, like, has been a total game changer for me. So it's been a incredibly like positive development. And yeah, so that's why for me, it wasn't until just not that long ago that, yeah, things started really like ramping up for me. So,
man, yeah. I'm so happy for you that you got this connection, because people don't really understand who, like in the creative industries, having an interaction like that can be, I don't want to say the term like life or death, but like it can be so beneficial for you to just meet someone by chance.
Yeah.
In this game. I mean, your story is just one example, but like just to run into somebody at an event that is or maybe isn't similar to what you do, or like, you know, musicians knowing animators, knowing directors, knowing producers, knowing actors, like this sort of creative film meets music world. There's yeah. so many people who do so many things, and you never know what, who or how or what's going to get you to like the your idea of what your next level is.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I think that's what made the pandemic so punishing for most people in the creative field. Like it was just so incredibly lucky that I made this connection, because like I can't go out to make new connections, but you know, an agency that represents video artists is a clear place to have, you know, larger studios coming to during the pandemic. Like they don't have to go out to events and whatnot. Whereas like me as an individual artist, like, yeah, those things were the way that I was finding my jobs before, and I would have been in a terrible, terrible pickle during the pandemic. And like, I feel for you, like, and other musicians, like, it's just, it's so heartbreaking, like, and yeah, man, I mean,
it's really crazy. Like in 2021 now, it's already 2021, I played 3 shows. And this is kind of one thing that I think is interesting about America, is that they are throwing caution to the wind, and just about everything you can imagine is back on the roster. Like I follow a lot of stand-up comedians, and I get newsletters every week of like, we added a second show in Ohio, you know?
Yeah.
You guys just keep buying tickets. So we added another Thursday late show, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, this is just crazy. And you see bands like, oh, we're back, you know, a mini tour, which is like still 30 theaters.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh my God, this is so crazy. And now I see flyers. Of course, you see all the, you know, you follow all these festival channels on Instagram, and you see like, okay, we've booked these bands and these bands and these bands in near Munich, a festival that you want to get on, which I am grateful to have played once, but I would love to play like a bigger stage again. Is the Pulse Open Air, PULS, which is a radio station, and they just announced that there's people playing, and you're like, wait, what? You guys are doing it again this year? Excuse me, what? And it's booked out, and you're like, oh, come on. But I do have to say, it is the first time, last month or so, was the first time that I finally got new offers from my booking guy. And it was such terrible timing, you know, like early 2019, I left this guy, Tony, that you met when
That's
we
right.
went to Reaper Vibe. Yeah. I left him long story, bad relationship, super unhealthy. And in early 2019, I said I want to stop working together. And then I had nothing, no prospects, no goal, no album on the horizon, like nothing. And for 3 months, I was working at the time at an elementary school, and I would come in early every morning, and for like 2.5 hours every morning, I only sent out emails to booking agencies and labels. And after like, I want to say at least 2.5 months of that, maybe it was, yeah, something like that, I finally got a feedback from one particular booking agency, which I didn't know them so well, but for the heck of me right now, I cannot think of their name, which is funny because I work with them now. It's so crazy. For the life of me, I can't remember the name right now, but I haven't really needed to talk about them in a long time. But this one agency got back to me, and they said that they would be interested. And as soon as we said, okay, that's great, let's do some bookings together, see if we like it, and then we can talk about, you know, if we need to, we can sign a contract or whatever. And the pandemic hit within like a few months of that. And then there was nothing left. And it was crazy, man. Grand Hotel Van Cleef. Grand Hotel Van Cleef.
Okay.
And so now it's 2022. We agreed to work together in like mid to late 2019. And now's the first time where they're like, I mean, he's given me a few shows, but like spare, you know?
Right. Because they weren't really happening.
There was nothing happening. And so now he's like, okay, well, you know, there's this slot that might have a place for, you know, some indie guys. This place might have some options, some open airs, some open festivals. But I mean, the big problem, like the complicated thing is now that if there are festivals, if there are open airs to be played, the first thing that these promoters want to do, of course, is book big artists so they can sell out the limited seats that they have, right, and make the money back for the effort. So I'm definitely not at the top of the ladder. So they have to look down a bit and say, okay, is there enough space here for these smaller guys to play? So that's where I'm kind of hoping, like, maybe there's a couple of shows. Like, I've had a few offers for the summer, so we have to see.
Yeah, but I mean,
really curious about it.
I'm just gonna hope for you, cause like, or just hope that it's only that everybody's still being very cautious, but as we get into the summer, that it'll really explode. And like you said, that, you know, there's going to be the higher, like sort of topper tier artists or whatever, like going to be picked first. But I think everybody's itching to get back into it, like in the US, but I think that Germany is just so cautious that they're going to be a couple months behind. It's like, also, even the pandemic hitting was, I always felt like it was lagging here a couple months behind, with, like, you would see with how crazy the numbers would be getting in the US, it would be a couple months later that would be happening here in Germany. So my hope for you is that as it gets to be in the summer, that they're going to be like, oh shit, all of these artists are booked and we're trying to add in all of these extra shows, because now the coast is clear and we're trying to fill up every inch, because, you know, German summer is incredible. It's everybody's outside every day and it's beautiful. So like,
yeah,
I think that it's very likely that now it's going to be harder for you to get into those spots where usually there'd be more openings. But, you know, hopefully there's no crazy new summer devil variants or whatever popping up that you're able, like, you know, if that doesn't happen, then I bet the summer's still going to be banging for you.
And I hope so. I hope so. Thank you for the positive thoughts. I hope it's like that. But what I do have to say is I'm very grateful for how the last year has turned out for me, not being able to do concerts. Like, I had all this energy and this need to, like, I don't know, annoy people publicly, and what I really wanted, and I couldn't do that on the stage. So like, I got, you know, very thankfully got a position at this radio station to do American Sunday, and it's like such a blessing to have this radio show. I love doing it. And
also your social media game, I think, because of the pandemic has gone way up.
That's part of it. Yeah, for sure. Like doing these German content stuff, that helped a lot for sure. I can't deny that. And that's really been nice. So like, you know, these things like the radio and this stuff. And then I wanted to wait until the end to say it, but I think I have to end the call soon anyway. Basically, I, throughout this time, finally, for the first time, got to officially score a television show. Ooh. And it comes out tomorrow. So by the time you guys hear this, it will have been out for a day already.
That's exciting. So like, was it they gave you the show and they're like, can you compose something to this?
It was a kind of a wild job because the director is really, and if he does hear this, he'll know I mean it with love, but he's crazy. And he does whatever he wants and he changes his mind all the time.
Okay.
His name is David, and he's a really cool guy. He had the brainchild for this show. He had the whole concept for it, I mean, and he wanted to have these people who are living in this apartment together, and it's kind of like a fake mockumentary style in the way of like Modern Family or Curb Your Enthusiasm. But the tone of the show is like dark, filthy, gritty humor. If you can imagine, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but with no limitations. Like where they would go with that. And so it's
a German show.
It's a German show. It's it's a sitcom formula, 8 episodes, 23 minutes. And it's like this really filthy, really great, something kind of fresh humor-wise, I think, for German TV. And it's going to be on, but funny enough, Efi is a writer on the show.
Currently
she's working on, she's in the writer's room for a second season. So we have to hope that the first season gets watched. So they film the second one, but they're actually already writing the second one, which is really cool. But it's called Wrong, and the English word wrong. It comes out, so you guys will see it comes out on the 9th at 3 p.m., I think, or noon or something. All 8 episodes will drop at once on RTL Plus, or TV Now, RTL Plus. I think they're the same thing. And, it's, so David Helmut. He's the director, he's the lead actor in the show, he's the head writer on the show.
Okay. So
yeah, it's one of those Glenn Howerton, Charlie Day sort of situations.
Gotcha.
And yeah, he's
I think you need
guy,
to, but, I think you need yeah. to be a bit crazy to be able to pull off doing all of those roles in like the good kind of crazy way. So yeah.
Totally. Yeah, he knows what he wants. You know, he might change his mind a lot, but in the end, like, he's changing it because he's usually leading you somewhere better.
Yeah.
I don't know. But he was a little funky to work for. Like, I've had people hire me to make music for projects or for events before, but he was so spontaneous. Sometimes I would spend, like, hours and hours on something, and he would just be like, no, I don't want any of that, you know? like use the expression, like, I don't want 1 second of that. I want something different, you know? He was so funny. Like the first thing we did, they gave me, they showed me the rough. So I had a link to the rough cuts of the episodes, and they said, just come up with whatever you think might work. And so they wanted a title track, an end credit track, and they wanted like transitions. Like imagine if you watch Friends, there's like scene to scene transition stuff.
Yeah.
And so I thought, okay, I'll find something. So I made like this sort of like, not pop punky, but just sort of this like kind of trashier garagey indie rock stuff. Because it's this gritty sort of dirty show humor wise. So I thought I'll match it with the heavy drums and sort of like a distorted bass sort of thing. And I made the stuff and then I sent it in and the producers were like, dude, this is great. We love it. This is a perfect fit. And then we showed it to David and he was like, I don't like it at all. I'm looking for something maybe like jazz. Like a complete left field turn. I was like, jazz? And so then I went in and we did choirs, we did jazz, we did like classical stuff, like bum 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 bum. And in the end, what we have is pretty diverse, I have to say. Like, so the title song is a remixed rock version of my song Smilin'.
What? All right.
That's what he wanted.
All right.
That's what he wanted in the end. It's wow. Like digga 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 boom, haven't seen you in a while. And then the ending track is this classical boys choir that we did, which was really hard, but it's actually really cool in the end. And the transitions are I beatboxed like jazz hi-hats, like
what?
It's really all over the place, but I think it kind of works.
All right. I'm very curious. And I'm going to have to check that out coming out tomorrow.
Yeah, you should. Yeah. It's out. So yeah, I mean, when this comes out, it's out now. So it's on RTL Plus and it's called Wrong, from David Helmut and Noya Zupa, which was very nice to give me that job. So I have to say, like, of course I miss concerts, but I've been very happy to get jobs like that.
Yeah. That's
like my dream.
Yeah, that is an excellent, excellent way to substitute concerts, I guess.
Yeah.
Since you have no other choice.
Oh, and I think, actually, I mean, he might cancel because he's crazy, but I might have him as the guest for next week to talk about the show.
All right. Well, that I will...
As a teaser.
That'll be very interesting. I hope that works out. Is he an immigrant though?
He is technically, yeah. He immigrated as a child from Russia, of all places.
Vaz, oh,
I know, dude, I want to say it like it's your last name, but it's just, dude. I could always talk to you for hours, and I miss our Discord game nights. But I already have to call it, unfortunately.
Yeah.
No, but we did an hour and some change, so that's a good one. I want to say genuinely from the bottom of my heart, thank you for being on the show. I'm sorry it took so long to finally get you on. We are overdue. And we were overdue for a chat in general. And I really hope you and your gang are all doing well. And I can't wait to have you on again and catch up with you in a few months and see, you know, what's been going on with you. And yeah, man, I hope I can come up to Hamburg as well, because I missed that city.
Yes, once, like, I was putting out those positive vibes for a summer that will be exploding with shows, so I'm hoping that will include a Hamburg date.
Totally. Nice, man. Do you want to, just before we say goodbye, do you want to plug anything for anybody, like, who's in, you know, a website or social media or anything?
I mean, you know, if anybody wants to go and look at me on Instagram, although I'm not using it a whole lot to post things at the moment, it's Ben Jamuels.
Ben, like J for Samuel, right? Ben Jamuels?
It's that's a portmanteau of taking my first and my last name, and that's, I don't know where that one, well, actually, I think that was some, for some reason, that's what my old neighbor used to call me. But anyways, yeah, that's what I've been using for social media forever.
And what's your website for your animation?
BenSamuelsMotion.com. Yeah.
BenSamuelsMotion.com. Guys, go check it out. We have some film people listening, so go check out what this genius does with his tippy-tappy fingers. dude, Ben, I love you, man, and thank you for being on the show, and let's talk real soon.
'Twas wonderful.
All right, guys, we'll be back next week. Thank you for being here, and bye.